Thanks for listening to the ARC Tactic Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Green. In this week's episode, we're joined by Judd Tully, editor-at-large of Arden Auction Magazine, to discuss last week's major auctions in New York. Judd, it's great having you back on. How have you been?
Well, I'm recovering from the marathon of last week.
It definitely was quite the marathon. Before we get into the market, I have to ask, I feel like I've had more people comment or approach me asking about the art market and the auctions than ever before, and specifically people who are outsiders to the market but are really just fascinated by it and fascinated by the incredible sales totals that they saw written about last week. Have you seen this level of interest in the art market in the past from people who aren't necessarily involved in the market?
Well, I mean, I've been hearing, I suppose the feedback is, yes, the numbers, the scale of the numbers, you know, the billion-dollar week at Christie's, well, billion-dollar plus if you add everything together, more than $2 billion if you put all the auction house sales together. And, you know, there's quite a bit of publicity now. There's the front page article and the New York Times, and I believe even the Wall Street Journal had something about just those giant numbers. And just take one painting, the Picasso painting of the Women of Algiers that sold for almost $180 million at Christie's in their looking forward to the past sale. You know, that raises eyebrows. I mean, you just think about that. They were expecting for that, they were saying, in the region of $140 million. And, you know, it went higher. And just the fact that that particular painting drew at least five telephone bidders who were still at it over, I believe, $100 million gives you some indication of not just people who don't know about the art market and hear these numbers, but, you know, it's becoming a kind of slightly different arena, I believe. I think it's just become more like a financial arena, really. I'm jumping from, you know, people who aren't that familiar with art prices, but there was this sort of, you know, gravitas of these gigantic numbers, and also the Giacometti that sold in that same sale that made pushing, I think, with premium, it hammered at $126 million. It didn't have any of the same interest as the Picasso, oddly, but it did sell for, you know, giant price.
Yeah, no, these numbers, even hearing the numbers now, hearing you say them, it still is pretty incredible. Looking at the top of this art market, I'm curious if you have a sense of if this is a lot of new participants. People always talk about China, Middle East, these different kinds of buyers. If you're getting a sense if it's those people that are playing at this level, and also, you know, we have obviously a lot of established collectors. I'm curious if you have a sense of how they're feeling and if they're just, you know, they've been lived through plenty of cycles, if they're kind of priced out and sitting out, or are they also participating at these kind of levels?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first part about the, you know, the breadth of the market, I definitely believe, you know, unprecedented numbers, you know, and these are, I would have to think, would have to be billionaires, but they literally cross the globe. It's no longer dominated as it has been for as long as, you know, people have been keeping track of these things. Excuse me. It's no longer European and Americans. I mean, Asia, Gulf States, I mean, it's just much, much broader, and especially Asia, particularly China, just by looking at, because, you know, you rarely see the people in the sales rooms. It's mostly still activity manned by people on the telephones taking bids from clients, and just by looking at the, unfortunately, the ethnic composition, or perhaps if you can hear the language being spoken during the bidding with the person on the phone talking to their client, Asia definitely is playing a tremendous contribution to this, to these numbers. And I think that's because these collectors that are going after these high-end trophy works haven't established as yet their collection. So they want to buy particular works or particular masterworks at this very, very top end. And, you know, just the fact that now there have been three Picasso paintings that have sold at auction for more than $100 million is, you know, that's fairly significant. The other part, which is very much related, your question about are these more, not old-timers, but more seasoned collectors that have been in the game for many years, where are they in this? It just depends on their, I would imagine, on their bank account. But for the most part, you're seeing these people are coming to market as sellers, not buyers. For instance, the poster child for this would be the great Chicago collector Stefan Edlis, who sold at Sotheby's Contemporary Evening Sale the cover lot, the Roy Lichtenstein engagement ring, which Edlis bought at auction, in 1997. I take that back, for $2.2 million. And Sotheby's had estimated, not specifically, but in the region of, they were saying, $50 million, and I think the painting brought in with everything something like $41 million. In any event, just looking at that, that appreciation over the period of years shows you what will bring a work out to market. It's just, a fabulous time to try to sell something that people want.
The Picasso, Giacometti, Rothko, and other top lots grab the headlines, but that isn't necessarily a true gauge of the health of the market, or at least it's not where most are participating at, over $50 million. Do you have a sense at all of kind of the day sales, the type of property that were in them, how those went? Do you have a takeaway on those?
Well, I mean, the basic takeaway is that the day sales were extremely successful, and people often say that that's really the way to gauge the market, because this is where the trade, the art dealers, not just collectors, are able to buy works either for inventory or for a client. And what I find most interesting about it is that many of the works that pop up now in the day sales are works that would have been in an evening sale, five seasons ago, meaning that the price points have just gone up and up in the evening sales, and that real estate is so valuable, and collectors who are sellers want to have their work in an evening sale because that's more prestigious, or they can get into that catalog and all of that. And so everything is just kind of being in a way rearranged. So you're rarely going to see a work now in an evening sale under seven figures, unless it's a work on paper or this fantastic group of small-scaled works from the estates of Ileana Sonnabend and her late daughter, Sundell, who was the daughter of, her parents were Ileana Sonnabend and Leo Castelli. So you can't beat that provenance. And those works went absolutely crazy because they just haven't been available on the market. And marquee names, but works on paper, small scale. And a portion of those were in the evening sale, but a larger portion was in the day sale, and those got gigantic prices. So it's a different market. It's harder to compete in, and there's more competition.
Well, how would you characterize today's market in comparison to past market booms? Do you feel like there are any significant differences now versus in past times, or do a lot of qualities about this market remind you actually of previous times when prices were so high?
Well, it was reminiscent for, you know, for brief moments, but this market, the current one, is broader and deeper than any other boom or bubble that I'm aware of. I mean, I remember in whatever it was, May 1990, and this is when Impressionist modern works sold for more than post-war and contemporary, and now that's pretty much not reverse, but it's a different formula now. But on one evening, Christie's sold Van Gogh's Dr. Gachet for something like $82.5 million, which was the highest price ever. And either the next evening or the night before, I can't remember which, at Sotheby's, they sold a Renoir painting, one of his great works, for over $70 million. And I thought, oh, you know, and then they started, you know, is $100 million work of art a possibility? You know, that was sort of the top end. And then in 91, actually in November 1990, the market took a tremendous hit and just went into this funk for quite a while. So I can't recall any like period, although the other thing to consider in this is that it's a very different playing field now, in the sense that many of these works that are coming up at auction have financial guarantees attached to them. These are deals made on a per picture basis, where essentially the deal has been made, the work has been sold before it comes to auction. And a lot of that is just private between the auction house and the seller and or the third party who's involved. And while guarantees existed back in 1990, I mean, it's not a new thing, the scale and of it is much, much greater. And, you know, you just have to listen to the auctioneer before the auction starts, and they'll rattle off, you know, 10 lots that have a third-party interest that hadn't been registered in time to be included in the catalog, where you can actually tell whether something has a guarantee. If you look very closely at the, you know, next to the artist's name, there'll be some kind of tiny symbol that if you go to the back of the catalog, you can find out what it means. Either that Christie's or Sotheby's is backing it, or Phillips 100%, or a third party, or a third party plus the auction house. So there's that whole financial, I don't know if you want to call it a gambit, but it's completely changed the landscape of selling. It's not a level playing field, in other words. So, and, you know, and it's interesting, you can then gauge how a work does just by, you look, oh, was it guaranteed? Did it go over the low estimate, which usually is an indication of where maybe the guarantee would fall roughly around before the buyer's premium was added. So there are all these different indicators now that one has to look carefully at, really, to see how well a work is done and what you can compare it to. And what I found interesting as well, not to belabor this, but in that Monday night, that $705 million Christie's, looking forward to the past, which is a funny title. But you know, there were estimates on work that had no equivalent, really, to actual past auction prices, and probably had more to do with what the seller wanted And Christie's was able to find buyers. So, and by the way, even Phillips, and I say even, it's a very much, it's a much smaller enterprise, but they had a sale that made about $97 million, which is one of their highest sales. Not a, you know, not a really great sale, but an evening sale that had that also had many financial guarantees. So this is a, you know, this is a it's a big trading activity. I mean, it's pretty fascinating.
Absolutely. And lastly, this past few rounds of auctions before last week, there was really a major focal point on young artists heading to auction really earlier in their career and how fast they were being flipped. But I don't think I saw much of that storyline last week in the papers or online, people writing about it. And I don't think I saw as many young artists appearing in the auctions. I'm not sure whether there's fatigue or fear of speculation, but it didn't seem like they were nearly as much of a focus as in the past.
No, yeah, that's absolutely spot on. I mean, it's like the last several seasons, you've had these, you know, super young artists coming up at auction and selling, you know, for three or four times the estimate. There was hardly any of that this time. And one could argue, oh, well, because, you know, the price points have gotten so high, we just can't put in a young artist. But literally, so many of these artists they're barely in their 30s. Their market has been burned because their prices went up too high and they can't be supported in the primary market anymore. So, I mean, that's a pretty big casualty list. I mean, there were some examples, a few, but again, nothing like in the past. And Phillips, which was known for sort of bringing out these younger artists, being the first ones, they've sort of dropped that as well because they also want to, you know, go into those, you know, high six-figure estimates right away. So yeah, I would say probably for the, you know, health of younger artists is probably a good thing to get them out of that arena because it's so dangerous. I mean, it's just, it's a career damaging thing to be in an auction and not have your work sell and you be a living artist. I did want to bring up one example, which I thought was so fascinating, just talking about prices.
Yeah.
And in terms of this atmosphere, but at, there were two major, what I would call major Christopher Wool paintings, basically the same size, basically from the same year and even the same series. And the one that was offered at Christie's didn't have a guarantee on it, and it was estimated at 15 to 20 million. And the it's untitled, but the it's one of these text paintings on a white ground, and the word on this painting was hypocrite. And it didn't, it bought in at 14 million. And at Sotheby's, they also had, again, the same series, untitled, this one called Riot. That was the word spelled out in these very broad black letters. That sold for, at Hammer, $26.5 million against a $12 to $18 million estimate. So you look at it and go, whoa, what does that mean? And some people say, almost jokingly, well, would you want to have the word hypocrite, you know, the size of, you know, 10 feet high in your dining room or living room?
Yeah.
Or, you know, but it's just so interesting that you can have these, still today in a strong market, you can have these very different results. And it, you know, takes some drilling into to find out why one got that high price and why another didn't find any interest.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
And it makes you realize, you know, how many people are there really that can participate at that price point.
Exactly. And, you know, and it was actually a disadvantage for the Christopher Wool that showed up at Christie's, because that came a day after the one at Sotheby's, you know, did so well at. And, you know, maybe there was just, you know, some bidding fatigue, or I don't know. I mean, it's several people told me that the one that didn't sell just was not, you know, it wasn't, it didn't have the same complexity and layers of, you know, underpainting, et cetera, that some people would want to have. But anyway, I thought it was a real eye-opener to me.
Judd, thanks so much for coming on and recapping the auctions and talking about the market with us. Your insight is always greatly appreciated here, and our listeners can, of course, find your articles at Arden Auction Magazine, as well as on Art Info, and you're tweeting more and more frequently. You're at Judd Tolley. That's your username, right?
Yes, and also website JuddTolley.net.
Perfect. All right, we always appreciate it. Thanks again, Judd.
Thanks, Adam.